I mean, and really just kind of sort of going back to the whole thing of like the whole Love on Rewind thing. Like, mm-hmm. that's really what it's about with me. Like, you think about back then, like the albums, the songs that we love so much had replay value. And a lot of that was because you didn't have streaming. You mm-hmm. you had the CD. So you had that CD or you had that tape. You ran that tape and you ran that CD in the ground until you could go buy another one.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. it was like, that's the one you had. That's the exactly. one you could afford to get at that time. So it mm-hmm. better be good.
It better be good. So who has been the most surprising or inspiring person that you have collaborated with this far and why?
In terms of music, in terms of podcasts.
Just in general, all the way around, all of the above, because you wear many hats. So I know you probably networked with a lot of people. So.
Yeah. Let's see. Musically, surprising. That's a really good question, because I've never really thought like who surprised me the mm-hmm. most when I collaborated with them. Because I think for me, whenever I collaborate with somebody, I expect it to be something dope. Because like if I'm mm-hmm. actually going to commit to working with that person,
right.
it's like I've already built somewhat of a synergy with them. Mm-hmm. Although I will say there is an artist that I work with. I want to say this was going on 10 years ago. So this guy named Radar Automac. I would have never expected to, like, I mean, we did a song together before, but it was like me, him, and then another guy, Gladiator, that we did a song together called Baby. But then I was in the studio one time with them and he just asked me to jump on two of his songs. And I was like, okay, so I literally wrote the songs right then and there in the studio. Now, one of the songs I didn't, yeah. So one of the songs, I hate that song. It's like my worst verse I ever wrote. Cause it was like, it just wasn't me, you know? But the other song that I did with him, that's one of my favorite verses I ever wrote. And it showed me also a side of him that it was like, okay, I always kind of knew he had depth to him anyway, but it's just different when you hear it on wax. You know, mm-hmm. so that was like one of the songs that like I really got to hear like the depth that he could speak with as, you know, as a lyricist or whatever. So it's a song called Believe. And like it just pulled, I think the songs kind of pulled a lot out of each other because we were able to sharpen each other through that song. Mm-hmm. So like if I had to say like the most, like really thinking about the most surprising collaboration, it would probably be that. Cause I would have never, I had heard his music before, but I would have never thought that I'd be collaborating with him.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's from a hip hop perspective. Testing. I would probably say when I got with my homie, Ramsey Brown, he ended up being the co-host on the Bounce Snack radio show with me. And when I say that was a random kind of sort of happening or whatever, because like I had hosted the show for probably the first year and a half by myself. And, you know, there were certain people that I was interested in possibly having as a co-host, but it mm-hmm. never just really panned out. But then one day he just came to me and was like, hey, you know, like you ever thought about having a co-host? I was like, yeah, I have thought about having a co-host before, but, you know, it just hasn't worked out. He was like, well, what about me? And I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I respected him so much because he just shot his shot.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, it ended up being a thing where, like, by the end of the series, everybody kind of sort of put us as a package deal together because everybody would always ask, when are y'all going to mm-hmm. bring back bars, you know? And what I loved about our collaboration, as surprising as it was, it ended up helping the both of us out because it ended up helping me out to be able to work with other people on a platform, whether I'm the creator of it or not. And it ended up being something that helped him in the process because now he has his own media company mm-hmm. and he's thriving, you know? So like to be able to see him thriving and to know that like, I was somebody that kind of sort of helped him along the way to understand, you know, how to interview people and how to do different things in the media. In the media arena, like it just makes me feel good to know that, you know, I was a part of his narrative and he was a part of my narrative as well. So
having your own media company, Balancing Act Music and Media, what are your long-term goals and where do you see the company headed?
So the goals change over time.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I first started out, it was just really just having an umbrella for all of my music, all of my media ventures that were currently existing. Now it's a matter of like in this ever-changing time of like, how do you communicate best with people, or how do you make sure that you're getting content out there to people in a way that they're going to receive it and in the places that they receive it the most? Mm-hmm. Because at one point, you know, I had this idea to have more adult contemporary hip hop stations or hip hop formats, because you don't really have adult contemporary hip hop like stations like that. I mean, you have it like, say, like in the satellite radio arena, like a little bit. But when I think about terrestrial radio, it doesn't exist. It's basically like you think about like here in DC, you have 93.9 WKYS or 95.5 WPGC. Like those are the main two urban contemporary stations, but they play a lot of music that's geared towards 20 somethings and under, you know what I mean? Like the 25 and under crowd, like that's really their main bread and butter, because like when it comes down to it, when you think about hip hop, when you think about a lot of music that's out, that's popular, it speaks to the youth. Like it's whatever the youth, wherever they are in society at that point. And so for me, I feel like a lot of times the people that get forgotten are the people that's above 25 or the people that's above 30, the people that's above 40, that like they're still making music. They're still in these arenas and they're really thriving and they're getting better, you know, as artists. But a lot of times they're not getting that recognition because they have to compete with the 20s, you know, the 20 year olds. And I don't think it's fair to really make them have to compete for attention with 20-year-olds, when a lot of times, unfortunately, in music, especially Black music, and I hate to say that, but a lot of times in Black music, there's a lot of ageism. And so to, you know, just to try to answer your question in a short way, like one of the things that I want to be able to do with my company is break a lot of those barriers. And not only just for older artists, but even the younger artists, because if you think about a lot of the music that's out there for the 20 somethings, it's a lot of the same music. And it's like, but yeah, but this 20 something year old is making this type of music and it doesn't sound like, you know, I know, and this is no shade to her because I love Glorilla, but it doesn't sound like Glorilla, you know what I'm saying? Or it doesn't sound like Sexy Red, or it doesn't sound like, you know, a Lotto, or, you know, artists like that. And again, no shade to any of those artists, but for me, it's always about balance. It's always about, okay, you can have those artists exist, but then you can have, say, like the Little Simses, or I don't know how to pronounce this girl's name. I think it's LaKaylee 47. I think that's her name. Or like the Rhapsodies, even though Rhapsody's a little bit older than those artists, but like just that style, or the Tierra Wax, like those type of artists that don't get enough play on the radio, because it's like, unfortunately, like it's heavy Glorilla, it's heavy Sexy Red, it's heavy Lotto, you know what I'm saying? It's heavy, like a lot of those artists. And it's like, for me, what I would want my company to do is somehow, some way, balance all of that out so that you get all of that, but then you get a lot more of the music with a little bit more substance. Or just even make it a thing where even those types of artists, when they have music with substance, put those songs out there. Let those be the songs that are like really getting heavier in rotation. Because I feel like a lot of times people, they belittle the intellect or they insult the intelligence of the consumer. And they assume that the consumer only wants this type of music. And it's like, but did you give them the opportunity to choose? Or did you choose it for
them?
And so, for me, what I would want my company to do is be at the forefront of saying, these are all of your choices. Now, what you choose from there is up to you. What you lean towards from there is up to you. But we're gonna give you as much of everything as possible, give you as many of the choices as possible so you can make your own informed decision from there.
I like that. I like that. And speaking again on like the ageism thing, I didn't start doing music till like my late 20s. So I was like, dang. When I was getting like 30, I was like, dang, I'm too old to do this now. I was like, girl, you're only 30 years old. Like, give it a break. Like, come on now. I don't know. I used to think that, like, if I didn't get it by 30, it's just too late. It's too late. But that's not true. I don't feel like that anymore.
It's not.
At all.
Yeah. And the crazy thing about you saying that is that if you look at a lot of the artists from back in the day, I think about, Freddie Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Freddie Jackson, his debut album didn't come out until he was pretty much about to be 30.
Wow.
I want to say he was born in 56, if I'm not mm-hmm. mistaken. And his debut album came out at 85. So he's pretty much 28, 29 years old mm-hmm. when his debut album came out. He had about a strong 7-year run until he was darn near 40. You think about the OJs. The OJs, they came out when they was teenagers. Mm-hmm. They was making teeny bop music. Then once they got to, like, you know, the 70s, that's when they hit their stride. But by the time they got to the 70s, they was in their 30s. Then they hit the 80s and had some more hits. Even in the early 90s, they had some more hits. Like, these dudes, like, they were the elder statesmen by the time they released a song. You know, like when him and Eddie LaVert, mm-hmm. Gerald LaVert, when they had Baby Hold On To Me. Like, right, Eddie was in his 40s by that point.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? But, like, nobody cared. But yeah, you know, like, it's I think a lot of times, like, I don't know where that shift happened,
mm-hmm.
where it became this thing about, like, oh, you know, I don't listen to that old people music, or, you know, or that music is out of style, or that music is out of date, or, you know, this or that, because a person's over a certain age. Whereas, like, when I was younger, I didn't care. Like, right. if yeah. it was good music, it was good music. Like, I was bumping the OJs like they were LaVert. You know what I'm saying? Like they were their sons. Like, their sons were like mm-hmm. the music that I listened to, because it was like, that was, it's that whole thing. I always think about something my wife says. Like, a lot of times when people make music, they make music for people their age and 10 years younger than them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, mm-hmm. but like, when I came up, it didn't matter. It's like, a lot of the artists were much older than me, but because it was good, that's the only thing I cared about. Is it good? Can I listen to it? Can I keep yeah. running this back and forth and, you know, front to back? Like, can I keep playing it? You know? So I don't know where the shift happened and why it happened, honestly, but my biggest thing when it comes to breaking that whole cycle of ageism is saying, like, look, do you really love music as much as you say you do? If you do, then a person's age doesn't matter. Right. And that goes on the other side of it too. It's not just for younger people looking at older music. Like, it's for older people looking at younger music. Like, nah, that's, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's certain that's people true. That, like, they literally will not listen to any other music if mm-hmm. it's not made in the 90s. And I'm like, right. that is goofy.
They say, I don't want to listen to that hip hop, bebop, all that stuff. I don't want to hear that. I don't know what they're saying. And then sometimes, right, like, right. stuff my son listened to, I don't know who made it. I just like the beat, so I still listen to it, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Like, I literally, like, it's funny because, you know, my wife, she's a huge Glorilla fan. And what's funny is the first time I heard FNF, I loved FNF. Like, because I seen the video for it. I was like, I just love the energy of the video. I was like, I love this. This is my type of music right here. You know what I mean? So, like, when she kept making, like, dope songs, I was like, mm-hmm. and a lot of my friends, they'd be like, I don't like Glorilla. I'm like, you tripping. I like Glorilla. You know what I'm saying? Then when I heard her album, I was like, I really mm-hmm. like Glorilla. Now you mm-hmm. can't tell me nothing about that girl. Dude, you know what right. I'm saying? But my thing is, it's like, she's significantly younger. Like, I mean, she's young enough to be my daughter. You know what I'm saying? But it's like, If music hits you a certain way, it really doesn't matter how old the person is that made it.
Right.
It's just going to hit you at the end of the day.
Good music is good music.
Exactly.
I didn't really like FNF, but, like, as time went on, I started to like her singles. Album is fire. I love it. It has yeah. playback value yeah. in my car, for sure.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Absolutely. For sure. Absolutely. I can't get enough of Let Her Cook.
Yes. Yes. I love that song so much.
Yeah.
So with BAM, what is the craziest thing that you have had to juggle in order to make it successful?
Family. I don't want to say that's the craziest, but that's been the biggest thing or the biggest challenge to making it successful, because there were a lot of times where I just put too much time into the business, but not enough into my family, because I was so focused on, oh, I got to build a business. And in the process of trying to build the business, I was neglecting myself. I was neglecting my health. I was neglecting my time with my family. And it came to a point where it was like, okay, either you learn how to navigate this whole thing with your business and your family and prioritize better, or you're going to mess around and lose both. So I was like, for me, that's been the biggest challenge running a business, is managing my time better and making sure that I'm pouring enough into the people that matter, who really are the ones who allow me the time to be able to even invest any time into my business, you know, because they don't have to. They don't have to, you know, allow me the time to spend time in my basement, spend time in my keyboard and my drum machine making beats. Or they don't have to allow me the time to be doing podcasts like tonight. Right. You know what I'm saying? To have great conversations with awesome people like you. You know, like they don't have to be gracious enough to allow me that space. But they do. But that's only because I've learned to be better at saying yes when I need to say yes, and being okay with saying no when that I need part. To say no. Because that's the thing a lot of times when it comes down to anything, but specifically business, is like the power of no will save your life.
Facts. That is so true. Do you have any other advice for aspiring podcasters or musicians who are just starting out?
In terms of podcasters, I would just say study other people, but don't mimic other people. Because what you have to give to the world is special. You think about snowflakes. No snowflake is exactly like the other. Like if you study If you study the composition of a snowflake, every single one, and it could literally be thousands, millions of them coming out of the sky at one time. Not one of them look alike. And to me, that's a testament to how God made each and every last one of us. So if no snowflake is alike, then no person is alike. So it's a matter of, and I would say the same thing for musicians as well. It's really up to you to, yes, study the craft, study who came before you, admire certain people and pull certain things from what they do that work for what you do, but still figure out what you do best in order to make your brand, whether it's podcasting, whether it's being a musician, to stand out. Because what you have is a one of a kind. It's a one of one. And you have to treat it as such. So my biggest advice to anybody trying to be an aspiring podcaster or be an aspiring musician is figure out how you are a one of one, and then make that into a lasting legacy or a lasting brand that like far surpasses what anybody else could do, and not trying to compete with anybody else or be better than anybody else, but just constantly evolving and being better than yourself the day before, the episode before, the song before, the album before, you know, just always looking to improve on yourself.
Improve and progress. That's right. So where do you see the future of podcasting? Where do you see that heading to?
The future of podcasting. I think that if people learn not to just follow trends all the time, or like just be so hard pressed to have clickbait, I think that the future of podcasting is very bright. I think that if people look to have meaningful conversations, and or even if it's, you know, even if it's shenanigans, that's cool. But do shenanigans different than everybody else.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like I feel like it can be done. I feel like there's a place for everything in this space. My hope in terms of the future for podcasting is that people learn to engage less in being controversial. Like that's their automatic go-to. Cause I mean, there's certain things you're not going to avoid controversy,
right, yeah.
But like if your whole platform is built off of controversy and like just being anti and just trying to, you know, press people's buttons, it's like that works, but you know, how are you remembered in time?
And that seems kind of stressful too.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, you got to worry about people being in your inbox, you know, threatening you and, you know, all of these, you know, incendiary comments and whatnot. People are crazy these days. So my thing is if people are smart, the future of podcasting is like, look, stay dangerous to a certain degree, but be safe to a certain degree. Like there's a balance between the two. You can be dangerous in terms of like not necessarily just going with the flow with everything, agreeing just to agree, because certain things don't need to be agreed with.
Right.
But at the same time, it's like, okay, if you are a family person, it's only so far you can go with what you're trying to say, because it's like you also got to walk outside.
Right. That part.
Yeah, no. You got to deal with real life people, because some, you know, some people crazy. They'll come up. They will literally come off that internet and still, you know, be crazy.
They hopping off the porch and they not playing for real.
Right. So, you know, my hope, they just make quality podcasts, you know, and don't not copy off of each other or not copy off what this person is doing and what that person is doing. That just people learn to just be their own person and do what works best for them.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes also understanding that maybe you're not the lead person. Maybe you a support person, you know, and that's with music too. Maybe you're not a lead artist. You know what I'm saying? It's okay not to be a lead artist. You you can support another artist. You can background. I think of somebody like most people who know their background singers from way back in the day will know who I'm talking about, but the average person probably doesn't. But Tawatha AG. She was the lead singer in M2ME, did a lot of background for Luther Vandross and a lot of other singers. But, I mean, if you heard Juicy Fruits, you know who Tawatha AG is. But Tawatha AG is perfectly fine being a background singer. She made a solo album. I don't think she ever made another one ever again. And she was perfectly fine with it. She's perfectly fine with it. She gets so much more money singing background. She gets so much more money teaching people how to sing. Like, there's so many different ways to be successful, even in the podcast world. Like, and that's really the point I'm getting to. Recognize what your strength is in the podcasting world. You don't have to be the host. You could be the be the person producing the whole thing and sit behind the camera and just enjoy the fruits of your labor.
And collect your check.
Exactly. And collect your check. That's right.
That's right.
So I would say in terms of the future of podcasting that like we have more quality podcasts, but in having more quality podcasts, people understanding that everybody isn't meant to be in front of the camera.
Right. Yes, indeed. And if you could interview anyone in the world, who would it be and why?
That's a really good question.
Dead or alive?
Dead or alive. That's tough. It's, for me, it's like so many people that I'm interested in. Interestingly enough, the first person who comes to mind, and you know, he's a voice person, but like he's so good at what he does. Kevin Harlan. He's a play-by-play commentator for, he does a lot of NFL games. He does NBA games as well. Like when I say this man could make paint drying seem interesting, if you let him call paint drying, he would make it sound like it's the best thing ever. Like it's the most exciting event ever. Like when I say this man paints, like they often call play-by-play commentators color commentators. When I say this man adds the color to a broadcast, I don't have to watch his TV broadcast. I actually enjoy listening to him on radio more than I enjoy watching his TV stuff. Because if I'm not available to like see it on TV and I hear him call a game, I feel like I'm literally right there. And I also feel like TV won't do it justice if I saw it on TV, because he describes it so well. So if I sat down with him, I would just want to say, like, yo, where did you get that knack to be able to call a game the way that you do? Like, I don't, I've never heard anybody call a game like you do. Like, to me, he is my GOAT in terms of color commentators. Like, I always wanted to kind of sort of get into that lane. But when I think about, like, the Kevin Harlans of the world, I'm like, I would have to study somebody like him in order to even have the bravery or the bravado to even step in that lane. Cause like that guy's the guy. Like, I don't know why he was the first person that came to my mind, but like Kevin Harlan, like anybody that's a big sports fan like I am, they know who Kevin Harlan is.
I want to look into him now. I want to see his colorful content and everything. That would probably be me. I'm going to look him up. I want to see it. So what's next for you? Yeah. Do you have any exciting projects or anything on the horizon?
So I do have a project that's going to be coming up. Not sure when we're going to be dropping it, but so I'm doing a joint project with my homie DJ Shane called Architects. Yeah, like that project I'm really looking forward to. Like I said, it's called Architects. And me and DJ Shane have done a lot of things together, a lot of tracks together. I've been featured on a lot of his projects. So for us to be doing an entire project together, I'm really excited to be doing it. We actually recorded our first song for the project last night. And definitely excited to like unleash that first single and share it with folks. So yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that Architects project.
Congratulations on that. I'm excited to hear it. Yes, indeed.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Where can the people find you if they're looking for you, trying to get in contact with you? Where can they find you?
So people can find me, like, the main places that I tend to be. I'm on Instagram and Threads at a.j.throwback. That's also my handle for TikTok as well. Here and there on Facebook. I still do Facebook. Facebook is at AJThrowback. If people want to pretty much tap in with everything I'm doing, from the music to my merchandise, my podcast stuff, they can go to my website, which is bammllc.net. That pretty much connects you to everything from there. Also, a lot of my music is on my Bandcamp page and even stuff that's not even on my website. So my Bandcamp page is ajthrowback.bandcamp.com.
Hey, and we'll have it all listed down below for everybody. If you want to follow, catch up, see what Mr. AJ Throwback has going on, go ahead and you can look down in the comments and we'll have it down below. And thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on Simply Shante. I definitely do. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Like I said, it's an honor to be on one of my favorite podcasts. What you have going on, my sister, is awesome. You are perfect for this. And I'm so proud of you for doing this.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right. We will see you all same time, same place next week. Thank you so much. Bye.